Welcome to episode 442 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. I'm Peter Anderson. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. The genealogy of Jesus plays a prominent role in both Matthew and Luke. Matthew, written by a Jew for a Jewish audience, functions like a swinging door between the Old and New Testaments, swinging backward into the Old, sweeping up prophecy, and pulling this into the New. Whatever the various views of the Jews regarding the coming of the Messiah, one thing was for certain. The Messiah would be from the house of David. Even many religious Jews today who await the Messiah believe that he must come from the house of David. That's why Matthew began his gospel as he did. He wanted to establish the identity of Jesus as the Messiah. Because the Messiah was to be the seed of Abraham, the father of the Jewish nation, and from the lineage of David, Matthew right away seeks to show Jesus' lineage and how he was directly tied not just to Abraham, to whom most Israelites were tied, but to King David. Appropriately then, the Gospel of Matthew begins with a genealogy of Jesus, starting with Abraham, father of the Jews, and ending with Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ. Luke, written by a Gentile for a Gentile audience, places Jesus' genealogy in chapter 3, just after he is baptized, and immediately after a voice came from heaven, "You are my son, whom I love. With you I am well pleased." Luke begins his genealogy by saying, "Now Jesus himself was about 30 years old when he began his ministry. He was the son, so it was thought, of Joseph." And he ends it with, "the son of Adam, the son of God." Matthew traces Jesus' genealogy to Abraham, emphasizing his Jewish roots. Luke traces his genealogy through Abraham back to Adam, and finally to God, emphasizing Jesus' humanity and his relationship to the entire human family.
Today's top 10 list.
10 notes from genealogies of Jesus.
Number 1.
Luke begins his genealogy describing that Jesus began his ministry at age 30. In Greek society, this was the age that most men entered public service. Up until that age, they would be learning their craft or trade, and at 30 they would start to practice it on their own. It was the same for the Hebrew people, but especially for the Levitical priesthood. Levites did not start to serve in the temple until they were 30. This is also the age at which David became the king of Israel.
Number 2.
In those days, people naturally assumed that Jesus was the son of Joseph and Mary. Luke corrects them here by saying in Luke 3 verse 23 that Jesus was only the supposed son of Joseph. But there is another way to translate the Greek, which many scholars think is possible. Rather than translating it as this, as was supposed, it could be translated as was the custom, as was acknowledged by law, as was entered in the ledger, or as we find on record. In chapter 3, Luke gives the recorded genealogy of Jesus as would be found in the public documents. In Greek and Roman genealogies, the names of women were not allowed. And so when Jesus was born and his genealogy was recorded in the ledgers, they wouldn't write down Mary's name, so they put down Joseph's name instead, even though they ran the genealogy through Mary. Luke can't change the legal record, and so he can't include Mary's name. So he includes the parentheses that simply says that Jesus was on record, or it was supposed that Jesus was the son of Joseph.
Number 3.
In the second half of Luke 3 verse 23, we read, "being the son, as was supposed, of Joseph, the son of Heli." Anyone who knew Jesus and knew Joseph and knew Mary knew that Mary's father was Heli, and Joseph's father was a man named Jacob. Therefore, when they saw the name that followed Joseph in the list, Heli, at the end of Luke 3 verse 23, they would immediately recognize that they were reading Mary's genealogy, not Joseph's. And by the way, when verse 23 says that Joseph was the son of Heli, the words son of are not there in the Greek.
Number 4.
Down in Luke 3 verse 27, where it mentions Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel. This is the Zerubbabel who led the Jews back to Israel from Babylon. He is a very important figure in the Bible, and you can read about him in the opening chapters of the book of Ezra.
Number 5.
Luke 3 verse 31 mentions Nathan. Nathan was the third son of King David and Queen Bathsheba. He was an older brother of Solomon. His name means he gave or gift of God. He may have been named after Nathan the prophet. This older Nathan prophesied during the reign of both David and Solomon. He was a big influence on David's life. He told David not to build a temple, as a shepherd boy turned king had planned, but that a son of his would build it instead. This turned out to be Solomon. He also told David his throne would be established forever. He confronted David with the double sin of having Uriah killed and the adultery of Uriah's wife, Bathsheba.
Number 6.
Jesus' earthly father, Joseph, is in the direct lineage of Solomon, the heir to the throne. But one of Solomon's descendants, named Jeconiah, was such an evil king that God pronounced that no descendant of Jeconiah would ever sit on the throne of David. So Joseph, although he was technically and legally of the royal line of David through Solomon, could never have sat on the throne because that line had been spiritually cursed by God. Satan may have thought that by getting God to curse the kingly line of Solomon, he had kept the Messiah from coming. But God is never thwarted. God's plans never fail. For right here we see that although the legal line was traced through Solomon to Joseph, the spiritual line was traced through Nathan to Mary. So however you look at it, Jesus is the heir to the throne of David, both legally and spiritually.
Number 7.
There were some in Luke's day who believed salvation was only for the Jews. But here in Luke 3, the genealogy goes all the way back to Adam, the father of all, rather than just back to Abraham, the father of the Jews. Jesus came for Jews and Gentiles alike. It is a great irony that some of the first people to seek out and worship the Jewish Messiah would be Gentiles. While most of Jesus' own people and a paranoid half-Jew, King Herod, thought they knew what kind of Messiah to expect, these travelers from the East had open minds and hearts. The Magi, wise men, were respected philosophers from Persia who devoted their lives seeking for truth, wherever it may come from. No wonder then that they found themselves worshiping the one who was indeed the truth himself. It is also telling that both the genealogies of Matthew and Luke affirm that Jesus was the Messiah for both Jews and Gentiles. Luke traces Jesus' lineage to time before the Jews. Matthew includes Rahab, the Canaanite harlot of Jericho, who showed faith in God and saved the spies, and Ruth, the Moabite heathen, who adopted the faith of her mother-in-law, Naomi.
Number 8.
Matthew includes 4 women in Jesus' genealogy. Luke includes none.
Number 9.
Matthew begins with Abraham and proceeds forward to Joseph, the husband of Mary. He omits a few kings to divide the family tree into 3 lists of 14. 14 patriarchs, 14 kings, 14 generations from the Babylonian captivity to Jesus. There are 77 names in Luke's genealogy. Both the numbers 14 and 17 are multiples of 7. The number 7 has significance in the Bible as it refers to completion, fullness, or perfection.
Number 10.
We see that Jesus was the fruit or fulfillment of all God's promises. He was the son of David, the true king. He was the son of Abraham, the true Jew. He was the son of Adam, the true man. He was the son of God, the divine man, the beginning of a new spiritual race. Father, thank you that there is room in the family of God for Jews and Gentiles, sinners and saints, rich and poor, great and small. Make us worthy to be members of that family. That's our episode. Remember that God calls you not only to live, but to thrive. Live life to the full today.